check. Testing 1, 2, 3. Good morning. It is still morning.
It is.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I good morning to you right in the middle of sipping that
that's fine.
Amazing iced coffee.
It is amazing.
Is it good?
Very amazing.
Yeah. I said, I hope you don't have diabetes.
No, no.
Because you might have to
keep me awake, you know?
Yeah. First of all, let me just say thank you, Brian. You introduce yourself.
My name is Brian Geiger. I am the head chef at Efebo's Restaurant Rub at the Beach.
Mmm, Italian.
Yeah.
That's some good stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you, I appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you letting me.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Okay. We both appreciate it.
Yeah.
And because it's tough, you know, to try to get people to come into a podcast because it's kind of, it's not that it's new, but it's kind of, I think it's a little bit new to the area.
Yeah.
And I know people are like, oh my God, what will I talk about? Let's talk about you and being the head chef at Efebo's. And we talked a little bit on the phone and I do like your story. It's a great story.
It is.
Yeah. The small part that I know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about it. You're the head chef at Efebo's, but you weren't always.
No, it took me, you know, a good 20, 25 years to get where I'm at right now,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Talk about the journey. How did that start?
Well, it all started out in high school.
Yeah.
My first ever restaurant job was at Grotto's Pizza in Long Neck.
And you know what? By the way, Grotto's, they do a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for as long as they've been around.
Yeah.
And I'm not as huge a fan of Grotto's Pizza, but I tell you what, anytime a Grotto's Pizza is put down in front of me, I eat the whole damn thing.
Right, right,
it's delicious.
Right.
I think, you know, so that's sounds like a pretty awesome place to start.
Yeah. You know, I was in high school still, a young guy. First job, bussing tables, washing dishes, you know.
Grinding it out.
Yeah, grinding it out, you know. And so, you know. My sister, her boyfriend at the time, which was somebody that I kind of looked up to. Funny story. Well, it's not really funny, but he kind of saved my life one day. We were out at the beach down in Dewey.
Yeah.
Or not Dewey, but Bethany. Surfing,
mm.
you know. Hungry. Got mm. some food. You know, went to McDonald's. Got some chicken nuggets. We're driving down downtown Bethany, you know. And,
yeah.
And I start choking.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And
some damn nuggets.
We're in the convertible, and all these people are looking around. And he's pounding my back, and finally, you know, it came out. But that was scary. So he was somebody I looked up to, and he was in the kitchen, and he was working, and, you know, that's something I wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I always cooked at home. I come from a Southern cooking family, you know. So I got into the kitchen, and by the time I got into the kitchen, well, he was gone.
Yeah.
You know, so he had left, and I spent about a good 2 weeks in the kitchen, and they told me, hey, you know, you're not good enough. So they sent me to Grotto's in Rehoboth.
Where was this kitchen now? I missed. Where was this kitchen at?
Long Neck.
Long Neck.
Yep.
Was it a Long Neck diner?
It's.
Or was it a restaurant?
Or do Grotto Pizza.
Yeah. Oh, it was Grotto. Oh, they said Grotto said you weren't good enough.
No.
Well, ain't that something?
So they sent me to Grotto's South.
That's tough too, right?
It is tough.
It's tough. You know, we were talking earlier about winter and how crappy winter is. I mean, you know, I believe that you have to have crappy winter to appreciate amazing summer.
Yeah.
You know, it's important to be, you know, humbled.
Yeah.
Bro, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
And you can and you can pick two directions to go.
Yeah.
It sounds like you picked the right one.
So they sent me to another Grotto's.
Okay.
In Rehoboth on South Boardwalk. Papa John's. At the time, it was Papa John's.
Hmm.
And there actually was a guy who was Papa John.
Yeah.
Who lived above the restaurant there.
The actual Papa John
the
guy?
The actual Papa John guy, yeah.
Because he got himself in a bit of a jam, didn't he?
Yeah.
The dark-haired guy?
Yeah.
He used to live above in Rehoboth?
Yeah.
I did not know
He'd
that.
He'd come down every day and get a
he just blew my mind.
Grilled cheese and some soup. Because he owned that property there.
I did not know that. Yeah. That is very cool. Yeah.
So it was called Papa John's Beach Bar.
So did Papa John's originate in Rehoboth?
I don't think it's the same Papa John's as you're thinking about, the pizza.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about pizza.
No, the guy's name was Papa John, though.
Okay. I thought, isn't there a Papa John's pizza?
Yeah, there is.
Okay, that's what I was talking. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
I got confused.
Yeah.
We were still on pizza.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Now I'm not as blown away because I thought, oh, my God, did Papa John's start in Rehoboth? And I did not know that.
He was called Papa John. That was what we called him.
So was this down on the avenue?
Yeah, South Boards.
Southport. My uncle had, did you ever know Mike Arquino?
Sounds familiar.
Uncle Mike. He had the surf grill, Surfside Grill.
Oh, okay.
So it was him and my aunt. They had the last, basically the last grill before you went into, you know, Poodle Beach.
Yeah.
And it's gone now. And they had that, remember the putt-putt was above it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all gone now. But yeah, that was a,
yeah,
it was a fun time back then, don't you think?
Oh, it was a great time.
It was a hustle.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like that anymore?
No.
No, it's not.
No.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So Papa John's, so you had, and they, that's where you started.
That's where I was sent off to. And that summer, I was awarded top 10 performer for Grottas.
Nice.
So
that feels good.
I kind of proved myself there, you know, and I got to meet Dominic, and we had a breakfast and everything and all that stuff, and got a little award, you know.
I had to feel good because I know even like, and we haven't quite heard all your story, but I know that there was a point, parts of my life where I didn't really feel like I was good at anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then to be kind of like recognized, you're like, geez, you know, that feels good. I want to keep doing that.
Yeah. Well, I went to a good high school. I went to Sussex Tech.
Okay.
And I learned a lot there, you know.
In the cooking field?
We didn't have
culinary?
Honestly, they didn't have culinary when I was there. This was in Georgetown.
Right.
I first went there in 93. Right after they got rid of the Vaux Technical School, and then it became Sussex Tech, and went there. And my first year there, you did an orientation. You picked whatever kind of classes you wanted to pick, and you went through that all summer long. And then the next year, you would pick what you were going to major in.
Right.
And I wanted to do electronics, but I was never good at it.
Right.
So... They looked at my grades and everything else I did, and my dad said, well, you were good at carpentry, mill, and cabinet, so you do that, you know. So I did that for the rest of...
Did you love doing that?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great, you know.
You got to love it.
11th grade, we built a house, you know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, did you do it, like, with Habitat for Humanity?
Yeah, just... where we donated it, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. We built it right there behind the school, you know. And my senior year, I had to do a, you know, like a thesis.
Okay.
And I built a...
Here, pull the microphone a little bit closer. That's why we have the headphones. So can you... So you
yeah.
Okay, make sure, there you go. Yeah. Now.
So my senior year, I had to do kind of a thesis. So I built a little playground for the daycare there.
Nice.
And that was really a tough challenge because I had to get a grant. I had to get the money for it, you know, order the supplies, build it, do a presentation in front of family and you know... teachers and whatnot. That was
a big deal.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
A grant, Jesus.
Yeah, you had to go through all that. Yeah,
it's like writing and stuff and typing, and you got it, and you did it.
Yeah. So I learned a lot, you know.
That's awesome.
At that school.
So that was in high school.
That was in high school.
It's a pretty big responsibility for a 16, 17, 18 year old kid.
Yeah.
Hats off to you.
Thank you. And so. During high school, I was in the Civil Air Patrol.
Civil Air Patrol.
Civil Air Patrol.
I don't even know what that is.
It's all around the country, but it kind of started during World War II in this area. Civilians would fly around in planes looking for German U-boats and stuff.
Okay.
Now it's more like a search and rescue kind of thing.
All right.
If an airplane crashes, then we're trained to go, you know, find it.
Is that federally funded?
I'm not really sure. It's kind of like a paramilitary.
Okay.
Kind of like underneath the Air Force, you know?
Okay.
And I did that for 5 years, you know, got to fly airplanes.
Do you have your pilot's license?
No. I did 4 flights, excuse me, and I was 1 flight away from my solo flight, but I never got there, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to get my pilot's license. In fact, I started the process. It's very expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a huge commitment. And then I was like, I don't know. Do I want a plane because of my ego or I really need to fly somewhere?
Yeah.
And for me, it was more about ego. But then when it's not easy. It'll challenge every bit of your brain trying to understand that. I did a course in drone to get my drone pilot's license and failed.
Yeah.
I got a 68 out of 70. I was like, jeez, so, I'm glad I didn't try to be an pilot. So keep going. I'm sorry.
So I did the Civil Air Patrol thing. My father joined with me. He was a senior member. We got to go all around, you know, the country flying in C-130s and, you know, just going to like boot camps and stuff, you know, it was fun. Did that for 5 years.
My dad was the first person to go to the Air Force Academy from Delaware.
Wow.
First graduating class 59.
Yeah.
And he retired colonel, but he was a C-130 pilot.
Wow.
In Vietnam, and it was a cool plane back then.
I got to go to Fort Benning.
Fort Benning.
Where they have the paratrooper training courses.
Yeah.
Where they kind of hook you up to the parachute, and then they take you up and drop you down, you know.
Did you get to do that?
No, I didn't get to do that. I got to go on the course there, though.
Nice.
The obstacle course, yeah.
So how did that all lead into becoming the head chef at the FIBOs?
Well, while, you know, I was doing all those things, after, you know, doing the Soil Patrol, I was looking for more, you know, and I joined the fire company.
Rehoboth?
Millsboro.
Okay.
Did that. My father joined with me, went to fire school, did all that. Did that for 15 years.
Are you still a volunteer fireman?
No. I kind of gave it up like around 2015.
Did you, I don't know if, I just did a podcast on Monday with a guy by the name of Brian Peters. He owns Rise Gym, but he's a volunteer fire department, or how do we say that? Volunteer fireman for Rehoboth. Mm. And part of the conversation that we had was that, you know, there's a real, the number of volunteers is very low right now.
It's terrible right now, yeah.
And I was actually thinking, because you met my one son, Sam, but I have another son, David, who's 13. And I thought, well, maybe you can join the junior volunteer firefighter.
Yeah, that's a great program.
Yeah, and just to kind of, you know, you mentioned Air Patrol. You know, I think it wouldn't hurt this country or our kids if they did a couple years of some civil duty, giving back. Because I tell you, it's so hard raising. Do you have any kids?
No, I don't. No.
It's tough raising kids because there's so much out there now.
Mm.
And you know, I find myself as a pretty strong parent, but, you know, I give them everything.
Mm.
I mean, they're spoiled. I don't know how not to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I need someone to fix all that. Yeah. Like the government. Take my kid and beat the snot out of him for the next 2 years and bring him back as a man. It's tough.
So after Grottoes, I spent about 5 years there, and I went to go work at a nursing home. In Millsboro, which is very interesting. So I applied there for the chef position, and I think it was my first day there. I was training with a chef and went into the freezer to grab one of those long sheet trays, you know, with wheels, and
mm-hmm.
and dropped a couple of trays of chicken tenders.
Mm.
And by the end of that day, that chef quit.
He did?
She did, yeah. I mean, she was out the door anyway, but I guess I just drove her off the cliff. I don't know.
That just was too much. She had to go.
Too much. So after that, they made me the cook's assistant. So I did that for a while. And you're making ground foods and puree foods, you know, for certain people. And that's a tough job because you got to be careful what you're doing.
Yeah.
People have different
restrictions.
Yeah, restrictions. And so one day, you know, we had this huge snowstorm, and I got there thanks to my parents, and the chef never made it. So lo and behold, here I am. And I jumped in, and I did breakfast, and I did lunch, and from that day on, they made me the chef there.
And what happened to the other guy? He was your assistant?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So I did that for a couple of years, and in 2000... that's when I went to go work for Lisa DeFebo.
She's Bethany. A great lady.
Yeah, yeah. That was a tough job, too. When I went to go work for Lisa, I didn't even know how to, like, flip a saute pan, you know?
Yeah.
I'd only really worked at Grottoes and the nursing home, so.
You could spin a dough.
Yeah, I could spin a dough. I learned how to do that.
But not flip a saute pan.
So I spent about a good year there working with Lisa. And it was a great opportunity for me, working with her husband, Jeff. And
that's a different level.
It is.
There, you know, and we've talked about, you know, my friendship with Matt. Were you friends with Matt? Did you ever work with Matt?
I had the honor to work with Matt Haley.
Yeah. He's tough. You know, it's funny. I always, you know, I only have great stories about Matt. But I, you know, I'll run into people that are like, you know, not all the stories were great about Matt. He could be pretty, you know, and I don't want to disrespect him, but, you know, he could be an asshole and he was tough. But I do believe that I'm sure that you probably grew from his
of course
negative and experiences.
There's still things he taught me that I will never forget that are in my head drilled, you know.
And that's a huge gift. I mean, I know, I think that would probably be great news to him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so, but the point was they're at a different level, you know. Yeah. They don't, you know, he's got DeFebo, they've got a lot on the line. Mm-hmm. Matt had a lot on the line, and they still, you know, that Sodell group still has a lot on the line. They can't, you know, they can't screw it up.
No.
And I will say, I've eaten at DeFebo's. It was amazing. Delicious. Yeah. It was like 15-layer lasagna or some sort of good, some amazing, cheesy, delicious chunk of happiness. Yeah. I don't know if you made it, but if you were involved, good job.
So my first year there, I worked with Jeff and Lisa and some amazing chefs there. And, you know, once 9/11 hit, the economy kind of took a, you know, spiral. And I was let go, and I went off my own separate way. And
you got let go from DeFebo's?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, so...
They just put you on, they just put you up on the shelf for a while.
Yeah, right.
You never let go completely.
Yeah, so I went off my own separate way. I think I worked at Ruby Tuesdays for a little while, and I wanted to get into the kitchen there, and... They made me, you know, a busboy and salad bar tender.
Oh,
at Ruby Tuesdays.
Ruby Tuesdays.
Yeah. And that was just terrible, manning the salad bar. Yeah. So, and then I went to go work for a guy in Millsboro who had a restaurant there, Marconi's, Italian restaurant.
Nice.
And ended up going to work back for Lisa in 2004.
Did you approach her? Or did she approach you?
Actually, to be honest with you, I heard that she was going to be opening up another restaurant, and I went down there to Bethany and sat at the bar, and Jeff was sitting next to me, her husband. He goes, "Hey, you know how to make pizza?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And he's like, "All right, well, we're going to be opening up a place right across the street, a pizzeria."
Oh, they opened a pizzeria?
They had a pizzeria there. It was called Isabella. It was named after Lisa's daughter, Jeff and Lisa's daughter.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I spent about a year there making pizzas and whatnot, and then I went off to go work for Big Fish Grill in Rehoboth.
It's funny, the guy I just did the podcast with, Brian, he's running their charitable foundation.
Mm.
Do you know Brian, man?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, doesn't matter, but it's just funny. It's a reminder, and that's actually why I started this podcast, because... You know, the idea was, you know, small businesses, helping other small businesses, but it's almost like every story, you know, I could do this podcast and then run into you at Wawa and then mm-hmm. see you tonight at the boardwalk. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, we're all intertwined. I mean, you almost have to be on your best behavior. Mm-hmm. Not that you wouldn't be, but right. you know, you have to live that positive lifestyle, because you never know when you're going to come back in touch with like a Lisa or mm-hmm. another Grottos or Big Fish.
You don't know.
You don't know. So it's, you know, that's nice. It says a lot about you if you're able to kind of weave your way through this town, and still
get back, yeah.
and not stink like burnt bridge.
So I worked for Big Fish Grill, and I did that for about 5 years. I was at Summer House for a while, and then I did the commissary delivery, which they had a commissary there on the premise in Rehoboth, and
at Big Fish,
yeah.
Yeah, isn't it like a deli kind of thing you can...
Actually, they have a deli there, but then they have a garage in the back. It's where Dominic used to keep his Cadillac.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They purchased that. And so that's they do wholesale, too.
Yeah.
Out of there. And so that's where they would make all their sauces and all the food and everything, and then I would deliver it to Summer House. I did that for about a year or two, yeah.
Man, you've been around.
Yeah.
You've seen some stuff. How old are you?
40.
40, okay. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So now you're back at DeFebo's in Rehoboth.
Yeah.
And how many years have you been there?
About a good year now.
And the way that I met you, because I follow your chef's table, is that what it's called?
Chef's House?
Chef's House.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Chef's House on Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, I started that about 5 years ago, I think it was, by myself. And
you know, I was... I have, you know, my parents and stuff are members of a club, and I'm going to just keep everything anonymous, but, you know, they struggle with chefs over there. And for me, you know, I feel like, you know, they'll fire a chef over there like at a drop of a hat. And I don't really feel like they allow, and I feel like we're kind of in a time now where people like creating value for themselves. You know, I had made a social app. I thought it would be a great app for a country club or something like that. The ability to really, you know, post, like, it was broken into groups. One of the groups could have been for the chef. The chef could have literally, you know, talked about where he got the food for the day, how he's pairing it with wine, if he got local produce or whatever, you know, just put little pictures out there as fast as he wants. For one, I think it's great because it allows the customer or the member to see, you know, to be, oh, this guy's got something going on. But I think it also allows a chef to create value in themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have any value, not your situation, but the situation that goes on over there, they just, you know, the chef gets tossed. And we live in a time now, it's really about creating value. And when you post stuff like that, I mean, I think it creates value right. for you as a guy and also just as a chef in a local town. Mm-hmm. And you're doing well at it.
Yeah.
It's tough, but you're doing great.
What, 4.5K members in that group?
Yeah.
So
that's not bad.
It's funny because I've worked at a couple of jobs and I've walked into the kitchen on my first day and they're like, hey, I know you're that chef's house guy, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, you know, when you're doing great stuff and people see it and not, you know, like if you got fired, they'll be like, oh, what happened to Brian?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I mean, I feel like that's the direction. I mean, especially like hairdressing, kitchens, you know, it's almost like that. I remember when I was a punk kid and my mom goes, because I was really headed nowhere, and she goes, have you thought about being a hairdresser? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, is that the job you get when you basically can't pull your head out of your ass? I'm a hairdresser. And yeah. I was like, I'm not going to be a hairdresser. Blah, blah. You know, 20, 30 years later, I'm a hairdresser. Yeah. But in this business, I have to create value. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be posting pictures of haircuts. You mm-hmm. have to be involved. You have to put that out there. People have to know. Unfortunately and fortunately, I mean, if you're not doing that, we're not creating value for ourselves in that world.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, is that why you started doing it? Or did you just like taking pictures of your food?
In 2013, I was working at a hotel in Ocean City, and for some reason, I just started getting this passion for taking pictures of food. And one of my friends on Facebook invited me to one of his groups, you know, one of the chef groups. And so I just started joining all these other groups, and some of these chefs were just rude. You know, you would
It's called arrogant.
Yeah, very arrogant. And you would post pictures and they would just down you and everything else. So I wanted to create an environment where
it creates less value.
Yeah, I wanted to create an environment
for them, not for you.
Yeah, I just wanted to create an environment where you could feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And people not, you know, look down at you because everybody's still learning, you know.
Absolutely.
So that's why I created my group, Chef's House, you know.
Do you find that happening on there? Are people critical?
No.
I tell you what, I love taking pictures. I love taking pictures of food. We made ribeyes last night. I think food's beautiful. I took pictures of raw food. I love, mm-hmm. you know, marbling in those ribeyes mm-hmm. from Fresh Market. They're just amazing. Yeah. I love the way an avocado looks cut in half. You know, I'm not a chef. You know, all I can make is a little guacamole, and it's pretty ugly, but I like it. But I love the way food looks, and I like taking pictures. It's beautiful. People say, why do you take pictures of your food? Why don't you not worry about it? I like it, you know, and it's getting a little weird out there, too. It's all right because you're a chef. You should take pictures of food. But, you know, when a guy like me, you know, 10 years ago, you maybe would see a lot of people taking pictures of food, and then people get critical. Mm. So now nobody likes to take pictures of the food, but I still do because I think it's an art and I love it.
Yeah.
And my hat's off to you because it's pretty awesome, especially that many people digging it as well.
Yeah.
And if you're creating a positive environment, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah. So probably in my early 30s, when I was working for Matt Healy, I originally started working for Matt in 2009, I was at Betty's. You remember Betty's?
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. I was working at Betty's.
Okay. Then I'll ask you the question. We used to go there and there was this amazing stacked parm. no, what was it? Eggplants. It was a stacked eggplant parm. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
It was like three medallions, but they were breaded.
Yeah.
And they were stacked and cheese dripping all over them with sauce and phenomenal. I don't even eat eggplant. Mm-hmm. And I would get that one time I went there and the breading was gone. And I was like, what? What happened to the breading? And it just, for some reason, there was a decision to be made that the breading went away. And do you know anything about this breading caper? It's funny. That restaurant was a lot. Did you remember it was a pasta bowl? And
I remember it being Adriatico, right?
It was Adriatico. Well, I think initially Townsend had opened it up. That restaurant was so beautiful inside. The wood, the bar was just amazing. And that's when it was the pasta bowl. And then Matt got it. And, you know, it's funny. I had this, when I opened the salon, I had this giant glass case that was like for t-shirts and junk. Mm-hmm. And it was over here on this other side of the salon. And I'm like, oh, what the hell am I going to do with this thing? Matt's like, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. He came with the truck. They hauled that thing over there. And it was the front counter at Betty's. Mm-hmm. And he put all the shirts and stuff in it. So I love that restaurant. I don't know. I think it just turned into like more of an older age. Mm-hmm. It turned into Betty Crocker.
Basically, I want to say the same thing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say
it. Like, it didn't have the...
It was Betty Crocker cooking, like, kind of, you know.
It was good.
It was very good.
I remember when we went there the first time and he was giving... For a while, he was doing those pretzel rolls for free.
Yeah.
And I was like, can we get another bag of those pretzel rolls? And then they started charging for them because they were so good. So you were there.
Yeah, I was there. And Matt Haley called me on the phone one day. And he said he needed somebody at Catch 54 in Fenwick. And he's like, well, there's only three people that can do the job, and you're one of them. So I was like, okay, I'll go down there.
That had to feel pretty good.
Yeah, it was awesome for him to, you know, call me on the phone himself.
Yeah.
So I went down there, and I spent the whole summer down there.
Was that pre or post-fire?
That was pre.
Pre-fire.
I was there the year before that. And then... I was actually currently working there, not the actual night that it was on fire, but I was working there at that time.
Yeah. That was a big deal.
Yeah. But around that time, I kind of got feeling really bad. I was drinking a lot of Red Bull.
Okay.
And went to the doctor and couldn't figure out what was wrong with me, you know, and had a CAT scan, and they found out that the pituitary gland and you behind your brain, you know, the third eye. There you go. That was pretty much empty.
Of pituitary.
I don't know.
Wow.
The glands. All your glands that are in there.
Is that from Red Bull?
No, that actually, because when I was 5 years old, I had seizures.
Wow.
So from 5 to 13, I had seizures. And I was in the hospital most of my childhood, you know.
Like a violent seizure or like...
I had a grandma seizure once.
Okay.
I think it might have lasted an hour. That was pretty rough.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
That's a big seizure.
Yeah.
That could kill you.
Yeah. There's probably a couple times where I shouldn't be here, you know, but...
Here you are.
So...
Ain't that no grandma seizure take me?
Ain't no grandma
seizure. Hey!
Come on, granny.
Yeah. Back up, granny.
So, it was interesting to find out that, you know, that pituitary gland was empty and I had no male hormone or a low male hormone, which they gave me testosterone for. Found out that I had thyroid disease, which is controllable. It's nothing serious, you know.
Right.
And Addison's disease.
That's what it's called?
No, Addison's disease would be like your adrenal glands.
Okay.
Which they don't really react. So when I drank that Red Bull, that stimulates that gland, and that gland doesn't work, so it was making it work harder, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I actually went to Johns Hopkins, and they did some studies on me, and they did a study on my adrenal gland and found out that it was, like, flatlined, you know?
Right.
But they couldn't figure out anything else.
Huh.
They were kind of blown away by how I went my whole life not knowing this.
You know,
as a firefighter or working in the fast-paced kitchens all these years, you know.
Well, sometimes, you know, you just get used to it.
Yeah.
It becomes the normal.
Yeah.
So there was no fixing?
Just they gave me testosterone and a thyroid medicine and a steroid for my adrenal glands. So I've been doing great ever since then.
Do you still drink a lot of Red Bull?
I don't drink Red Bull anymore now.
Yeah. I cannot believe... I don't think that stuff's good for you.
No.
I don't know why. I don't know anything about it, but these, you know, I see, you know, these big monster drinks, and I mean, it's just, it can't be good.
No.
I mean, even if it's not hurting you, it's got to be affecting, you know, how you handle when you're not on it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be like an addiction. I've never been into those drinks. Thank gosh.
So, I never went to college. I never went to culinary school. I just, you know, started out as a dishwasher and worked my way up.
Oh, you went to college. College of Hard Knocks is what you went to.
Yeah,
and I tell you what, it's when you have children like I do, and especially my son David, when he's, you know, college is going to be in the next few years for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you really want to go to college, or do you really want to learn like something that you're passionate about?
And, you know, Lisa went to CIA in New York City, so that was, you know, I got to learn from her, you know.
Yeah, she's great.
And Jeff, yeah.
Just great, too. Yeah. Me and Matt used to go over to... Because they have that pottery place, I think. Don't they have... don't they have the pottery place down in Bethany? Or in Fenwick?
I think
that's Kim and Lisa. Or yeah, Kim and
her
Jeff.
Her friend?
Yeah, Jeff. What, I think it's Jeff, but
yeah.
Matt and I would go over there and sit at that little coffee bar and just chat mm-hmm. with Jeff, and he was a great guy. Mm-hmm. I still see him. Yeah. I see him every once in a while.
Yeah.
I see Michelle every once in a while as well. Mm-hmm. Once a year, I try to catch up with her. Do you know Michelle?
I do.
Yeah. She's very cool.
Yeah,
she's funny. So you got now did I skip? Are you? Did we get to the head?
We were talking about Matt Healy.
Oh, we were.
Yeah.
We don't have to talk about him. I'm sorry. I was just.
I worked for him for about 2.5 years, and then.
So you got sick, and you had to go through all that, and then you finally come out on the other side. Were you like a new lease on life, or were you just like, that was just another thing I had to go through?
No, it was kind of like a new lease on life.
Yeah.
You know? I started growing facial hair and everything, you know.
Oh, you couldn't before?
No, I never had any before, no.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You got a new mustache.
Yeah.
Hey now.
Yeah. So, you know, it's controlled and I feel great now, you know, so. But not knowing it for all those years is just crazy. You know,
it is weird, you know, and you're 40, I'm 50. It's like my body hurts.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's tough. It's tough getting older.
So after I left working for Sodell, I went off to Ocean City to work in a big hotel.
So how did you, just moved on?
I wasn't happy at the time.
It's a big company.
They, you know, I felt like I couldn't be myself, you know.
Yeah, I get just, that.
You know, I was just a fry guy, you know.
Right.
But, so my last place working with them was down at Lupo in Rehoboth.
How'd you like that place?
It's very small.
The kitchen?
The kitchen's small. Everything's downstairs in the parking garage.
Between you and me, I hated that restaurant.
Yeah.
I thought that was a weird, weird pet. I thought and I'm not negative, the food's delicious.
Yeah.
But it had a weird cadence to the mm-hmm. food. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't, you know, food has a rhythm for me. You know, it's if I'm eating three meals, it's usually kind of a ritual. It's more like a salad meal, a dessert. Mm-hmm. I had trouble finding my rhythm when I ate there. The food was great. One thing about Matt, he always used to kind of, you know, go out there a little bit. You know, I remember the tripe tacos at Papa Grande's.
He's another guy that didn't go to school.
No.
He, you know.
Well, you know, if you ever hear a story, you know, the kitchen or the restaurant industry was the only industry that would love him until he learned to love himself. You know, and that was why it worked for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he was like, you know, I don't know your whole story, but his story had a little more, you know, drinking and some drugging. He always say he got he had his come to Jesus through a SWAT team.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because he was barricaded in his house, and mm-hmm. I don't know the exact story, and I don't want to mess it up. But for the most part, it was like it's time to get better.
Yeah,
and the kitchen or the restaurant industry was the only industry that would take him. I think he was up north, in fact, up in
Wilmington, right, or somewhere up there.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure exactly where he went, but it's a great story. I wish he was here, damn it.
No.
I really do. I miss him. I like his story when he received the James Beard Award.
Yeah, he had a good year. I mean, even though that was the year he tragically died, I believe, right?
Yep. Well, and I remember he called me over and I went over to his house and he's like, let's go for a walk. And we went for a walk and we're just walking. He goes, you know, sometimes I just worry they're going to figure out I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Oh, no.
But that's serious. I mean, that's like, you know, that's how I think, you know, I'm never going to get good at this. Or I'm, you know, they're going to figure, I mean, in the hair business, I'm like, I wonder if they're going to ever figure out, like, I don't know how to cut hair. Mm-hmm. You know, of course I know how to cut hair. I've been doing it for 10 years now, but I'm always fearful. And he was the same way. And he was like, you know, I'm just afraid they're going to figure out, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
But, you know, even Matt Haley, you know, had second thoughts and fears. I think that's, you know, I always say that's when the miracle happens. You know, if you can work through that fear,
yeah,
it's where we grow.
Yeah, I try to be very humble in this business, you know.
For an arrogant business,
it's tough. And there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of other chefs around. And, you know.
Do you?
Yeah, you got to.
Well, and I, you know, I personally think, the most important thing about food is, you know, the taste. Of course, I would think that's important in the presentation, but, you know, if you're taking forever to present the food, or, you know, if people are having to wait, or you don't have it organized behind the scenes, you know, you almost do more damage, not you, but
yeah,
you can do more damage than, you know, serving out delicious food. We've had several restaurants open and close next to me. One, the big restaurant was like Pilot Town and Kendall was there, but they moved on.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was a little restaurant and I remember they've all struggled. And I told Matt, I go, they should do breakfast. I've got it figured out. They should do breakfast. They should do breakfast sandwiches, stand out on the corner, cut them all in half, give everybody that drives by a half a sandwich and a cup of coffee, shake their hand. And he goes, do you know anything about cooking? I go, no. And he goes, you should shut the fuck up. I go, oh, okay. Because he goes, breakfast is almost the hardest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in my mind, a giant pile of bacon. Oh, I got the bacon covered. But, you know, if you get that last greasy, nasty piece of bacon, you might have just lost a client.
So talking about breakfast, 2017, I came back to work for Lisa. And at the time, I was working in Ocean City at a restaurant called Key West down there. And I worked with her earlier in that year in Rehoboth. I was only there for about a couple weeks, and it was slow, and she didn't have anything for me. So I went back to my job at Key West. But she kept bugging me, I need your help, I need your help. And I said, I can't really do anything right now. This is what I'm making here at nighttime. And she said, well, come on and help me in the morning. So I went to go work for her and Bethany cooking breakfast and lunch. And you're talking about hard. She probably wanted to fire me about three times that summer.
But she couldn't because she needed you.
Well, I got through it.
Yeah.
One day I probably did about 90 covers by myself.
What's hard about breakfast?
Execution, you know. The eggs have to be perfect, the bacon and everything, you know.
You just can't let it set
you
and get cold.
You just can't, no.
And it doesn't do well like under a... What do they call that?
The
like
heat
heater.
Lamp. Yeah.
The iguana or what does
the
that
heat, mean? Heat lamp. I don't know. We just call it the heat lamp in the kitchen.
Isn't there a better name for the heat lamp? I thought it was called like the iguana or something. I thought it had a cool name. All right. Heat lamp.
We'll iguana go with that. Works.
Not really.
We can start something new. Iguana.
My iguana broke down. So that I would imagine that would be the hard part is, you know, just keeping it all delicious.
Yeah. And for her, it has to be, you know, perfect the right way, you know.
Right.
So I did that 2017. I did that all summer long. And it was tough, you know. I'm sure she probably wanted to get rid of me a couple of times. And like I said, one day I did 90 covers by myself, 90 people, you know. And that was pretty much, you know, my seal right there.
Your cape.
Yeah, my cape. And once summer was over with, I went off to Berlin where they opened up their restaurant.
What restaurant?
DeFebo's.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. They
How many DeFebo's are there?
There are three right now.
Berlin, Rehoboth. Bethany, and Rehoboth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And so you went down there to help him start that one?
I went down there to help him start that one. And
now, where were you living at the time? Because you're all over the place. I mean, is this one of those, like, are you driving to Berlin every day? Or do you move to Berlin? Or
just drive.
Just drive.
Yeah. I was in Berlin and helping out them get ready. And opening night, I severely got burnt bad. Right here, my whole wrist, all the way around. Yeah, it was terrible.
How?
I was just showing, one of the other guys how to cook. And he was, trying to sear some salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he was poaching it in oil. And I'm like, well, you got to get rid of some of that oil because you just want to sear it, And he went to go dump it on top of one of the pans. And I'm, doing my thing. And when I go grab the pan, I flip it like that. And all that hot grease just went down my whole forearm,
Wow.
It was bad. To the point where I almost needed a skin graft. But wow. I never skipped a beat, though.
Just kept working.
I never skipped working, no. I worked right through it.
That is bad.
Yeah. And so one day I was there working in the daytime, and one of the executive chef there was working, and Lisa walked in the door, and she saw him, and she said, well, you need to do this faster, quicker, Because she's all about time. Time is money,
Right.
So he throws his hands up in the air and he goes, well, I didn't sign up for this. Lisa walks into the walk-in. He walks in behind her and that was it.
You were now the head chef.
Well, I wasn't exactly the head chef, but I took over the daytime operations. So I would go in every morning. I would do all the prep and cook all the lunch.
Wow.
So the nighttime would have their prepared, meals and everything ready.
Do you prefer mornings or do you prefer, because, if you're in the restaurant industry and you work at night, you're up late.
Yeah.
It's like there's a whole lifestyle change.
Or if you're working and you're up late and then you sleep through the day,
Right. That's tough.
It was nice. When I was in Berlin, I'd work in the morning and I'd get off in the afternoon and you got the rest of the evening to do whatever you want. Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. I'm an early bird. I like being up early.
Yeah.
I don't function well at night as far as like working.
Yeah.
So that was in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you end up down in Rehoboth?
Well, actually one of the chefs in Rehoboth was leaving and literally took almost the whole kitchen staff with him. So here I am I live in Millsboro. Here I am going to Berlin in the morning. Work until about 3 o'clock and then driving all the way to Rehoboth and then working there, through the night.
That's crazy.
I did that for a couple months.
Well, what's really happened is you've basically done the work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot to do all that.
Yeah.
You clearly don't have kids.
No.
Because I'd be in a lot of kids settle you down a bit. Do you want to ever have kids? Do you want to have a family?
Well, I was married. For almost 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I never had kids. Tried, but never did.
Yeah. So. I mean, like I said, I'm 50 and I have a 6, a 7, and a 13. I should be like 40 with those kids,
Yeah.
I definitely got a late start.
Yeah.
I
might have a late start too. Who knows?
So what this is always a question I have. How do you decide the menu for the day? Or is it kind of set?
Well,
Do you have any input on that?
I basically have free range over what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have our actual set dinner menu, but
right.
every night we have specials.
Yep.
So I usually come up with those on my own, and then I run it past, my higher-up chef and Jeff or Lisa. And one thing that's really cool is every Monday we have Monday Madness. On the off season. Have you heard about that?
I haven't.
No. So we have our weekly specials in the off season, kind of bring in the locals.
So does the off season end in like Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. Right before that. So Monday Madness is $21. You get a choice of beer or wine. You get soup, salad. There's usually 3 or 4 entrees and a dessert.
Wow.
And that's really fun because I come up with that menu every Monday.
Sounds good.
I make my own desserts, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is it like Italian desserts or just anything?
Sometimes it's Italian desserts.
What would be, what's your favorite Italian dessert?
You can't go wrong with a tiramisu, though.
Mm.
Yeah.
What's the one that has the layers? Like, you know, it's like the thin, almost like that Greek kind of filament, you know, whatever that.
Oh, yeah, I never talked about
that. What's that thing
called? I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, my God. We get it. Friday nights is like, we call it steak night. So I usually get steaks on Friday, and then we buy this amazing dessert from Fresh Market. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name, though. I'm glad I don't remember the name, because I don't want anybody else buying it. Because right. It's secret, rarely right? there, actually. Yeah. I don't want to make it any more popular.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they give you kind of like, well, you've earned it.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't become, they don't give you free rein on certain things if you haven't earned it.
No.
I almost wonder, you know, it sounds like your story, and I love the story. It's almost, you know, what I hear mostly in the story isn't as much about the cooking. It's about your commitment, your availability.
Mm-hmm. Being loyal, you know.
Being loyal. And when sometimes we're not always treated loyally.
No.
You know, it's, because you can get, not you, but people can get a resentment over certain things, you know. I mean, I've been fired before and or let go or whatever you want to call it. And I've had clients that have left me. And it's easy for me to go, you know, screw them. But you never know when that opportunity is going to come back. And like you used the word humble.
Yeah.
And it's funny. People say, well, you can't talk about being humble. No, but you can talk about how humility works in your life. You know, if you live that life of self, that, you know, F you attitude, fine, it's a miserable existence. If you live that life of, you know, humble, how can I help?
Mm.
Let me put my hand out. You know, that's a better lifestyle. Mm. It's an easier, softer way. And that's kind of recovery talk, but it makes sense in the real world too. 'Cause I've lived both in a much happier, the easier, softer way.
I owe a lot to my father too, man, because, my first interview with Grottos didn't go too well because I had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
You know, I wasn't using the proper words, if you know what I mean.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you know, it is Grottos. I mean, you're just trying to learn. It's like,
you know, I was kind of swearing here and there, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
You were a little rough.
A little rough there around the edges, yeah.
You need a little polishing.
Yeah. So, yeah, that I actually went to Bethany. My first interview when I first started with Grottos, and that interview didn't go so well, you know, because I didn't know what I was doing. No. I was a young kid, you know. I'm swearing this and that, you know. And my dad, he polished me up.
That's what dads are for.
You know, he taught me how to be a man, and I went back. I actually went to the Grottos in Long Neck and had my interview there, and it went well.
How much did he have to teach you, or how much was he an example?
Well, he was a teacher, so that's what he did, you know.
But, I mean, he said, oh, my father had to teach me. I mean, I would imagine your father was probably a pretty decent guy.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that was it him being an example to you, or did he have to say, listen, Brian, I'm going to have to teach you this? I mean,
more of an example.
Example, yeah. Because, I mean, you know, as a father, I always tell my kids, I'm not your father. I'm your guide. You know, I'm just, because I'm just a kid that's just grown up.
So my first ever job was working with my father at Vlasic in Millsboro.
Yep. Is that still even there?
No.
Damn.
No.
Pickle plant.
Yeah, pickle plant. That was my first job.
How was that job?
It was rough.
I bet.
I spent 2 summers there. My first summer, I would catch the pickles. Like above me, they would take the whole cucumber,
yeah,
and they would throw it through the spear, and I would catch it, and I would roll it down to the girls, and then they would be packing it, you know.
Wow.
And sometimes if they were getting ready to leave and you threw down pickles, they'd get mad at you because they want to leave, you know, and it was rough.
Politics.
Yeah, it was rough.
But you did that for 2 years.
Yeah, my second year, I was working in grading, and there was like a conveyor belt in front of me, and I would have to sort out the good pickles and the bad pickles. And
wow.
It was so hot out there that I would like kind of lean my elbows against the, you know, table there.
Uh-huh.
And well, eventually I got fired for that because it was so hot. And I saw elderly ladies get just hauled out of there because they would faint, you know?
Yeah. But you know, there's also sometimes people, I mean, I don't know the situation, but sometimes people fire you just because they know that you're meant for better. So, I don't know if that was the case, but
knock on wood, that was the first time I ever was fired. And ever since then, you know.
My first job I ever had was at Arby's.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that job. In fact, I was 15, and it was the first year I could work. I mean, I wanted to work. I liked money. And my boss, you know, in that same old funny story, you know, he's like, you know, I want you to mop this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I could mop this way. It would be better.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really about what I thought. It was following directions. Mm-hmm. And that was a big learning experience. Yes. A life lesson experience. But I would later go back and I think about that all the time. And yeah. So that was 35 years ago. I think about that one lesson early. You know, it's great to have a good example in your life.
And you kind of go by that, you know?
Yeah. And I didn't stick with that field.
You know, my dad was one of the managers there, and there was nothing he could do about it, you know?
Sorry, son.
Yeah. It's time to get your own job.
Time to go. Well, I think there is a level of arrogance in the restaurant business, and I wonder if it's just all the freaking shit you have to go through, you know, the ups and downs. I mean, if it just makes you, Matt used to tell me, he goes, you know, guys like you and me are arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, wait a minute, what's that mean? He goes, the rules don't apply to you and me. That's how I think. And, you know, I wonder if you know, your life, your route, the road you took to get to where you are, it seems, you know, bumpy. It seems like a lot of people would bump right off of it and not stick with it.
I'm telling you.
It's not.
I had to scratch and claw. Yeah.
And I don't even know, do you ever feel like I'm safe? Because, you know, it just takes one bad service or one bad meal. I mean, it doesn't sound like that is your case, but, you know, am I going to have to be going to Berlin again? I mean, do you ever settle in? So do you ever thought about opening your own restaurant?
I have.
That's what they all think, right? You know, isn't that the next move?
Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, are you involved in like budgeting? Because that to me is where I would screw up a restaurant.
I have to manage that, yeah. I do all the ordering and I have to maintain the budget every week, yeah.
So if you over-order.
Inventory, all that.
Yeah, so do you, you know, Lisa's like, hey, bro, Brian. Too many zucchinis, amigo.
You know, there are times when you do go over, but it all really depends on your food sales.
Right.
If you were busier than you projected that week and your food cost is like 27%, you're good. You know what right. I mean? They're not going to get mad at you if you went over. It's just as long as your percentages are good.
Well, it's always funny, like your Memorial Day or Labor Day weekend, because you know it's a big weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you order a ton of food, and then it like rains. Yeah. Or, you know, something where not all the people come down. And the first thing I think about is, oh, those poor restaurants, you know, because they probably really.
I actually just had to do an Easter buffet.
Oh, I bet.
And it was the first one I've done there. And so I kind of went a little overboard with the ordering because you don't know.
You don't know.
I mean, this time of year, it's rough when you're doing ordering because you don't get everything every day, you know. Cisco, yeah, your food provider you'll get, but produce truck may come two or three times a day, you know. So by Friday, you got to make sure you have everything you need, or Saturday, that's your final cutoff, you know. So you got to make sure you have everything to get the Monday, you know.
Well, and I think a group like the DeFebo's group, they can probably handle those little mistakes here and there better than like a, you know, a one-man operation mm-hmm. where – you know, one of the restaurants that was here, the guy, the owner, I loved him. He was so good. But, you know, I always say they became too broke to be open and too broke to close.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a tough, I watched him. I mean, the guy almost lost his mind trying to figure out how to be successful and didn't turn out too well. But luckily, he's still around and I think he's working over at Palette.
Yeah.
And he's a great chef. He used to do the coolest stuff. Like, I'd always order these quesadillas, and he used to take this briny, gnarly olive and stick it in the middle of a avocado.
Mm.
And, you know, you take the pit out and then replace the pit with this briny avocado.
Olive.
Olive, thank you. And I'm like, what do you do that for? Until I started eating the avocado, and that brine would soak into the avocado. Mm. And I'm like, this is almost better than guacamole. It was good. Yeah. But, you know, that's little tricks you learn, I guess, in the cooking business.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that show Burnt, the movie Burnt?
I did.
What did you think of that?
It was different, you know.
I thought it was a great movie. Yeah. It reminded me a lot of Matt.
Chef too, right? That was another one.
I don't know. The one with Bradley Cooper. I mean, he was really good, but that was tough.
Yeah, it was a good movie though. Yeah.
But it addressed that, you know, because I think in this business, even in, you know, in the restaurant business and this business, because they're kind of a lot alike.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of arrogance. There's a lot of addiction. There's a lot of drinking. There's a lot of struggling. Yeah. Dealing with personal demons.
I just recently lost a chef friend.
Who was that?
He was actually the chef when I was in Rehoboth.
And he passed away?
Yeah, he committed suicide, yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Was there struggles like addiction and stuff like that, or just no idea?
No.
Well, and there's, you know, you talked about choking. I mean, Vinny, did you know Vinny? He had, and I don't want to screw this up, but I was friends with him. I knew him for a long time. In fact, he was one of the first people I met when I moved to Rehoboth in 1994. But he choked when we had that big snowstorm. He choked and died.
Hmm.
And I can't remember his last name, but they had, where the Crab House is, there was another restaurant that was there before. And I think his father used to have, there was a little steak shop next to like Louie's. And I think they were associated with that too, but I might be screwing that up. But, you know, it's weird, like people passing on, especially as we get older.
Yeah.
It's odd.
And you're right, it's tough. Working in the restaurant business can be tough, you know.
Do you feel, I mean, do you ever get like overwhelmed? Do you ever get?
Yeah, the stress is real.
The stress is real.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll, you know, I've worked with a lot of chefs that weren't very nice, and they always yelled and screamed, you know, like Gordon Ramsay, you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I was brought up into in this business. So you just got to try to be nice, you know.
Well, and I was going to say, do you want to stop that?
I do. I mean, I'm really, you know, working on that right now.
Not treat people badly.
No. Sometimes it's just, you know, you don't think about it. You just, working in the kitchen, it's hot, you know, you're on your feet all day long, and, you know, it's just a lot on you.
How do you stay, because see, like when I first started doing hair, I worked at a salon, and, you know, it was great, but after a while, I was like, you know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to just show up for somebody and cut hair all day. I mean, I appreciated it, I was, you know, I was grateful, but I needed to own my own salon. Do you get to a point where, I mean, it almost seems like you can't just be the head chef forever. I mean, I almost feel like you got to, I may be wrong, you may have to tell me, but that, I would always be like, I should open a restaurant or partner up, or I need to take these amazing skills to the next level.
Yeah.
And then you got to do like catering, then you get a van.
Yeah.
Then you get another restaurant. Yeah. Are you not open to that idea, or are you just cool with doing what you're doing for right now?
I'm just trying to get back on my feet right now.
I get that.
You know, currently separated from my wife.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It was my doing.
Oh, I'm not the one to talk to about it. I just got married.
Yeah.
For the third time.
Yeah, okay. Well.
Third time's a charm, though. And I, you know, that's another, you know, I've had to really, because it was my fault. Mm. And I've had, you know, I want to be, you know, there for my children. You know, I'm not married to my ex-wives, but, you know, I still want to be a great ex-husband, you know, as great as that I can be as far as like as raising our children. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to be like, go to hell. Luckily, they're pretty even headed, but there's, you know, humility.
I actually had pretty major foot surgery done in 2014. On my foot. It was rough.
What was it? What was the problem? Plantar fasciitis?
Yeah, I had hammer toes.
Okay.
Almost to the point where, like,
you were curled under?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bad bunion, you know?
Is that just luck of the draw, or was that from standing on your feet a lot?
It's probably genetics or whatever you want to call it, you know?
It's tough fixing your foot, too. I'm going through some foot stuff right now, and I'm avoiding it because I know it.
I mean, you're on your feet 13 hours a day sometimes, you know, 10 right. hours. It's hard.
But you got it fixed. You're good.
Yeah, I think so.
So what's the future look like for you?
I don't know.
Are you just ready for the summer to get going?
Yeah, I'm ready. You know, it's going to be a good summer. It's going to be very busy too. It's already starting to get there now, you know.
Do you think that's just all the people moving here, or do you think it's going to be, because isn't every summer busy?
Yeah, but
is it going to be different?
I think it's going to be different
this summer. I think it's going to be a hot summer.
Yeah.
The amount of rain California got.
Yeah, I don't know what the future holds for me, man, but I'm just going to keep on pushing, you know.
I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
How'd that go? Because that was an hour.
That was an hour?
Were you nervous?
Didn't feel like it, no.
No. Were you nervous?
No. I was nervous on my way here, but
I appreciate it, man. And I am on your side, and I'm like you. You know, whatever. If you will ever come back, I'd love it.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about food, so we got the hard shit out of the way.
Yeah.
Now it's about, let's make you shine.
Yeah.
You know, come in. Let's talk about food. My door is always open for you.
Yeah.
Okay? And that doesn't mean I want any special service or anything. I just, I want to, if I can do anything to create value for you. And I know, Lisa and them, they're awesome. And, luckily they're good people. So, I'm sure I know you're in the right hands, but I'm interested. And I want to hear more about your cooking.
Yeah.
I appreciate coming on, Brian. Come back sometime.
I definitely will.
Keep up that chef's table.
House. Chef's House on Facebook.
Chef's House on Facebook. And what do you do there? Can I post pictures of food?
You can post pictures of food, whatever you like.
Yeah. If I've been accepted into the house.
Yeah. Are you a member? Or
I don't know. You're stinking up my Facebook with all your food, so I'm assuming I am. I get all of your let me just text my wife. She's like, are you in the middle of a podcast? Yes.
Yeah.
I look at all your food and I was talking to somebody about doing this podcast with you and they followed your food.
Oh, wow.
So 4,500 people, that's bound to happen.
Yeah.
Let me just look at my Facebook and see if I'm a member, because I want to be. It's called
Chef's House.
Chef's.
And, I try to let anybody in there. If you're a home cook, doesn't matter. I mean,
Chef's House. Yeah, I'm part of it. I can write something.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I can write, I'm part of it.
You can post our podcast, yeah.
I will. I'll post our podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take your picture right now, but I want to do another picture together. But every time I do these damn podcasts, the person drives off and I never take the picture.
Oh, wow.
And I need to post it. So I will do that. Brian, I appreciate it, my man. You keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a great job at it.
Awesome.
And I appreciate you trusting in me to do this with
me. I'm glad you had me on. Yeah,
brother. All right, man. Take it easy.
All right, have a good one.
Bye.